Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast, and there's a lot going on in the world, a lot to talk about. The topic for this discussion is going to be an interesting one, but also I'm recording this in advance, so several days in advance, actually, so some things may change and not sync up or whatever, but found some posts online being shared around, informative posts, I think, especially here in the Michigan area, this No Kings movement, right, that we're seeing, basically a orchestrated and organized effort to launch protests. I know there's over 50 cities here in Michigan where I'm located, and these lists are being put out, so people basically know what areas to flock to participate in these quote unquote peaceful protests. And here's the concerning part is that these protests very often are not peaceful. Sometimes they are. I'm not saying that, you know, here's two things. I'm not saying that they're not all, they can't be peaceful. I'm also not saying that I'm opposed to protesting. I think that if you're going to protest in a manner which is, I'll say, like, socially acceptable by our, well, let me, how can I put that? You're not being an a-hole. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, right? Because society standards are kind of irrelevant at this point. There's parts of our society which find the things that we're seeing on the news, right, out in LA with the attacks against federal agents and ICE and things like that, the riots were their protests, right? The media in many instances and our elected leadership, like, you know, Maxine Waters, are coming out saying there is no violence. Don't let people tell you. Don't get it twisted. I was out there on the street. I seen it. I talked to people. And it's like, nope, you're completely misleading people for your own personal benefit and to not, like, to minimize the blowback. The videos are all over social media. People have seen it. There's cinder blocks being thrown. People are taking shots at police. Like, I saw a clip of that. People are, like, hiding around corners and shooting at police as they drive by, which is obviously a very dangerous thing. They're seeing, you know, vehicles now drop off these masks, these protective masks and stuff, being linked back to potentially, that's like a conspiracy theory, to Walmart, because Walmart's suffering because of the tariffs and they don't like Trump or something. Like, it gets really out of hand. So very interesting to see what's going to happen. Hopefully, if any of you guys experience this, please feel free to share your story and your experience with me. But I hope that where I'm located, we don't experience this. I hope that it's a peaceable protesting to whatever you're protesting. Why people would want to protest against removing illegals who are in many cases violent from our country that got in here by illegal means, as somebody who comes from a family of immigrants, like, I don't know why you would be opposed to that. Like, immigrate legally, nobody's got a problem. Come in here illegally and do illegal effed up stuff to people. You're going away. Like, you're not going to be wanted here. We don't want you to stay here. I'm 110% favor of what ICE is doing to remove the illegals. I think that this is, it looks like a drastic effort because it is a drastic effort, because we had 4 years of unacceptable border control or lack thereof that led to the situation that we're in now. I mean, this isn't just like, we're not just attacking certain minorities here. These are actual, I mean, if it does appear that way, it's probably because they came from specific areas of the world. We have immigration laws here. Every country in this world has immigration laws. We're just the one people bitch at because we're supposed to take on everyone's problems while ultimately pushing out all of our money to solve everyone's problems. So we don't have to get into all that, of course. But it is something that we have to be aware of. You know, when the election happened at, you know, the end of last year and Trump took office at the beginning of this year, I was on record saying, I think we're going to see another summer of love. I hope not. But this is like, look, we're in the middle of June. The weather is warm. People are getting weird and behaving like animals, waving foreign flags all over the place, attacking each other, blocking traffic and attacking vehicles in traffic as if that's some form of protest. I'll tell you what, if somebody was waving a sign in front of me, it said, you know, like, Free Palestine or something, which, whatever, it could be any sign. It could be, you know, like, you know, F ICE or whatever, and then proceeded to smash in my windshield with a baseball bat to get me to take notice to, they're not getting me as a supporter. So it's the most, like, idiotic, flawed logic I've ever heard in my life. But more to come on that, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll have more to share on that, because all these protests and things are scheduled to take place on June 14th. So if you guys are going to be around, and you live in a very potentially liberal area or very close to a very liberal area, I would just be on the lookout. Maybe don't go out of the house if you don't have to. I've had some people message me like, I'm already stacking mags. Like, dude, I don't think you're going to be mag dumping out a window. I think just maybe calm down a little bit there. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. Obviously, do what you have to do to protect your family. Remember that property, at least here in Michigan, we can't defend property with deadly force. Look into the laws. I'm not going to advise you guys on the legalities of any of this stuff because that's not my role here. Know what your situation is and prepare accordingly. But have a interesting discussion this week. We're going to get into around teaching versus sharing, guys. This is something I talked about on a live feed video that I did on Instagram over the weekend, and got some very interesting comments and things like that. Talked to some people privately as well in the law enforcement side, both of whom that I had conversations with were former military as well, so that's interesting. But we're going to talk about teaching versus sharing. It's interesting to me where we start drawing the lines of delineation of what is acceptable in this community to be quote unquote teaching. And then when we are just, I don't even like using the word just, because I think it takes value away from the overall effort that we're putting into it, right? But when we're sharing what we've learned at classes, at our own experiences, through our own training and time and things like that, which could be, hey, I was dry firing this for 2 hours and I figured this out. Or, hey, I've been dry firing this for 200 hours and I figured this out. You know, and in both cases, there's a heavy, there's time invested. And we're going to get into that. So it should be a very interesting discussion. Some of you guys may have some very strong feelings and opinions about it. And I'm here for it, guys. I feel like if you get to the end of this, make sure you let me know if I'm off the mark, how you feel, what you think. I'd love to continue the discussion with more feedback and input. And if you guys are listening to this, please make sure you guys hit the subscribe button. I'm terrible about saying this because I don't like to just sound like somebody who's popping off as some kind of cringy influencer who's only trying to drive numbers. But the numbers are huge. They allow us to pull in sponsors. They allow us to grow. They help drive the algorithm so the message gets spread. And to that point, man, if you guys could reshare some of the stuff, like, it goes a long way to help fighting the systems that are pushing back against us. So major platforms were on our Instagram and YouTube and Spotify. And while Spotify is great, Instagram and YouTube stifle us in the algorithm hard, man. And it's because of the content, you know. Some of you guys have been listening since the very early days here and are really about it. Every little bit helps. Really, really appreciate it, you guys. And if you're you've been a supporter, love having you guys here. If you want to find, there's additional ways to support us. We do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/prepared_mindset_pod. You guys can check that out if you want. If not, no big deal. There's not, I don't think it's anything special. I'm not one of these big Patreon profiles that's posting stuff all the time and has migrated away from free social media. I think that the work that I'm doing, and as well as partnering with a group, Sturker Defense here in Michigan, we're really trying to push out access, you know, not to put behind a paywall necessarily, not to limit people's access, but really to open it up and help people grow and learn in the ways which they find most valuable. And in terms of who supports us in doing that, you guys are obviously, as an audience, paramount in that. So if a tap on the subscribe or follow button is something you guys can find time in your day to do, it means way more to us than you probably realize. It helps tremendously when we go look at things like sponsors for things like videos, getting stuff sent out to review or test or put together, you know, video content on certain skill sets. You know, there's some plans that I have around CQB stuff that I really want to do some longer form video on, but paying for a facility is, it's kind of expensive. So that kind of thing is huge for us. In terms of support, additionally, we do have some partners in the space that have been just awesome with, providing gear and support, obviously, over the last, for all of them, I think it's been several years, honestly. They're great companies, great people. They make great great goods and provide awesome services. And I want to take a minute here to tell you guys about them, because without them putting the support behind us, it makes this whole endeavor a lot more difficult. And that certainly starts with the team over at Custom Night Vision. You guys, as we're talking about night vision, it's a huge capability. You know, it's one of those things where we talk a lot where you can't buy skill, you can't buy capability. And there's always an asterisk next to that statement, because night vision, you literally either you have it or you don't. Now, there's training, as with all things, afterwards, but it's a huge capability with which you can actually buy it. You can purchase it and then you have it. It's not something that has to be trained and learned and practiced over and over. No, you should, but the literal capability is something you can buy, and that's where Custom Night Vision comes in. Their website is customnightvision.com. You can go check out the website. They have an awesome chat function that's built into the lower right-hand corner of the website. So if you're a complete noob to night vision things, and many of us are, and that's okay, like short of, you know, where the power button is and you know how to use your eyeballs to look through them, you have questions around tubes and the you know, the data sheets that come with these. Hey, is FOM the only thing I need to look at? You know, because that's a pretty misunderstood metric. How do I pair these together? Hey, my experience in the military was just this, you know, green versus white. I had a discussion with somebody the other day. Hey, you can see farther with white than you can with green. And I go, hey man, I don't know that that's actually true. This is where the team at Custom is going to be able to answer those questions. They're going to be able to dispel some of those myths, because these guys are actual experts. They're end users. They're out there training. Guys like Kevin are taking classes from dudes like Will from Orion Training Group, Stuffs and Pews, right? They're out there training. They're learning these products. They're understanding the pros and the cons. Things like, you know, manual gain, do you really need it? White versus green, Gen 2 versus Gen 3, and all that really, really good stuff. So whether you guys are looking for a single tube device like the MH14, like the PVS14, you know, the great options that are out there, they have a full lineup available at the site. Or if you want dual tubes, binocular housings, they have options like the RNVGs, like the Lloyd Innovations MH1, like the Nocturne Manticore, and so much more, you guys. Again, the website is customnightvision.com. And speaking of the training, speaking of Stuffs and Pews, Will is a cadre member over at Orion Training Group, and they are also a great supporter of ours, you guys. Their website is OrionTrainingGroup.com. You can head over to the website. I know Will actually has, I think it's July 11th, and I think there's a date also in August that Will's going to be offering his Ricky Bobby course. So if you guys have seen Will, he shoots very, very fast. And I know that at least one of those classes is going to also be with our friend Rob Epifania down in Houston, who is a just tremendous tremendous shooter in general, but his handgun stuff is just really, really incredible and very impressive. If you guys are looking to get access to that kind of information, that kind of quality training, head over to OrionTrainingGroup.com, head over to the courses section, sign up for the class, as well as see all of the different opportunities you have to learn from dudes like Jared and Jason and Blake and Alex, Lindsay, Josh, you know, all those guys over there that are doing just the incredible work at Orion Training Group, bringing their knowledge, their experience, their passion for teaching to folks like me and you that are all seeking to be more prepared individuals. Again, the website is OrionTrainingGroup.com. Head on over, check it out for yourselves. And here, finally, we come to our good friends over at 100 Concepts, you guys. Their website is 100concepts.com, and their motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. And in the times that we're in, you guys, I think that that motto speaks to all of us, perhaps much more than it maybe should. But really, with the things we're talking about, with the protests and everything, man, like, you want to do good things, you want to be dangerous when you have to be, and you want to live free. Head over to 100concepts.com and check out the entire catalog of goods that they have available, whether it's their light caps, which is obviously what set them on the map. People really took notice what an innovative idea it was, executed in such a simple way and at a cost that everybody could access. And they've taken that. They listen to your guys' feedback. It's crazy. They're one of these companies that actually asks for feedback and genuinely listens to and considers the feedback to make the product better. So now you have the ruggedized light caps and scope caps. They moved away from the Ranger bands, which you can still totally use, and obviously the devices are still field repairable in that manner, but now they have their shock collars, so you have an easier installation. It's a little bit less headache to fight around, you know, your scope or your light body, whatever have you. They also have great, you know, helmet scrim and pack scrim that are actually NIR compliant, unlike some other companies out there. They have great, great options. They're always working on something new, you guys. Head over to 100concepts.com today and pick up some gear for yourself. So thank you to all of our supporters. Thank you to you guys. If you're still listening, man, like, thank you guys. Every time I look at the numbers, I'm humbled that people actually care about what I have to say, and that the knowledge and things that we're putting out there are appreciated by folks. So really do appreciate all of you guys as well. You are our largest sponsor. You are our largest supporter. Make no mistake, without you guys, there would be no Prepared Mindset. So what we're talking about today is something that's actually pretty near and dear to me is teaching versus sharing. And this is like a really high level summarization of an otherwise very intricate point, but we're going to unpack it here. We're going to unfold it. If you guys have only recently started listening, let me give you guys a little bit of background on where my teaching really came from. So, in high school, I was in marching band. All right. And it's pretty awesome. I know you guys are real floored by that. And I developed a really strong passion, which I still have. It's still a very big part of me personally, for marching percussion. So like playing the snare drum. All right. And in high school, we were like state finalists and things like that. And I did a performance ensemble after high school that was at the highest competing level, which you can find for that activity, not even in the United States, like in the world, and, you know, was a top 15 finalist 6 years in a row. So it was a big part of my life, and I really wanted to give back and really wanted to be an instructor, be a teacher. So I started as soon as I left high school. The summer after I graduated, I was teaching a local area high school's band camp. So basically, since I was 18 years old, I have been teaching, learning to teach, and understanding the ins and outs of effectively communicating and teaching, and with high school students. So your brains are still developing. Your frontal cortex is not all there. You know, there's a lot of ego and emotion built into it. So you have to be a little bit more sensitive. And well, yes, music is obviously a very liberal thing versus we're talking about tactical stuff and shooting, you know, training and all that, which is very conservative in nature. If you want to put a political lens to it, right? And I found that I think I don't want to like pat myself too hard on the back here, but I thought I had a pretty decent knack for it. You know, one of the programs I worked with for several years won multiple state championships. I had several students go on to do things outside of the high school realm and be successful in their own regards. So teaching is something I had an interest in at a young age. I developed that. I nurtured it. I only really stopped teaching last year, 2024. I took one season off in all of that time, which was actually turned out to be COVID. Came back to teaching shortly afterwards and at a reduced capacity, and then just finally stepped away last year when I, you know, things with the podcast became too involved. I needed to direct my time, my energies where they were going to give me the most value back. So basically have about 17, 18-ish years of around the calendar teaching and instruction. So communicating, you know, concepts and explaining them in multiple ways is something that I've really dedicated a large part of my life to, considering I'm not even 36. When you look at that, it's better than half my life, which now makes me feel very old saying it in that perspective. So I have a teaching background. I'd be very comfortable telling people I have a teaching background, or I am a teacher, an instructor of sorts. And where this gets interesting is if you guys have been following anything we've done on the Instagram lately. If not, go ahead, pause this because it's very relevant to what I'm going to tell you. Pause this, go check out our Instagram. It's @prepared_mindset_pod. And you can see there's video clips at Battlefield CQB in Westland, where we now have like door inserts there that can be used for classes. They can be used for our Thursday night combatives training sessions. And I was explaining how to approach and assess a threshold with a closed door. So starting very fundamentally, like we're not talking about if the door is locked or unlocked. We're not talking about who's inside. We're literally talking about how you look at the door, how you assess it, and how you would go about opening it with two people. Very, very fundamental. And I know because guys will jump in the comment section. I got one, you know, chuckle fuck that wanted to drop in. Like, well, how would you open the door if you approached it and found that it was locked? And it's like, well, that's a dumb question. It's not dumb, but well, it depends. How many people do I have? Do they know that we're coming? Do we have units surrounding the building? I mean, from a law enforcement perspective, do we have pull teams that can work on the windows? Do we have access to diversionary devices? Can we not use diversionary devices because there's oxygen in the room? There's like a bunch of outside factors. Like, That one question will trigger probably 10 to 15 more off the top of my head, right? But people always love to be critical of that stuff because they either don't like what you're doing, don't like how you did it, don't like how you said it, whatever. But I'm explaining like this very, hey, look at the door. Can you see the barrels, right? Can you see the hinges? You know, talk about taking the air gap out and checking the handle and how to non-verbally communicate with your partner there at the other side of the door so that you can open it or whatever. And, immediately, you know, got some messages, from people, and in pretty much every instance, the question, it came back to the singular question of, do you run classes? Or more specifically, are you accepting money for this? And I found that to be very interesting when it kind of just clicked in my brain, because I go, no, I'm not asking for money for this. I mean, I've certainly had people offer me money or ask what I charge, you know, when they see the content. And I go, no. And I give a lot of due credit to Battlefield CQB in Westland, Michigan. It's a laser tag arena. They've hosted two Orion training group classes there, a 3-day class last year and a 2-day class that was just about a month ago now. And they have what they call their Thursday night combatives sessions where, I mean, we do a lot of CQB, but you could do a lot of different stuff in there, given the space, the very unique space that they have. You know, Tim and Nelson, are very cool about it. So take advantage to, you know, show people what I've learned there. I get people reach out, hey, you know, what do you charge? What does it cost to come? Nope, it's totally free, man. Like, don't worry about it. I don't ask for any money. The way I look at it is I have people asking me to show them these things. So here, if you want to learn this, I can show you what I've learned. At no point do I ever say like, this is the way it has to be done. This is the way that is the right way. It's not even my way. Like, here's the thing. I've only taken CQB courses from Orion Training Group. So I've learned from three, in a course perspective, I've learned from three people. So Jared, Jason, and then Joe Pistone. So I've learned from those three guys. In a classroom perspective, I've also had, obviously, you guys are listening to the podcast, I've had multiple conversations with different people on different tactics and approaches, gotten insight and input on different ways to do things, like Kyle and Drew, guys here that run the Two Vets Development Group training company in Michigan. They have a little bit different way of doing things, but hey, there's additional perspective there to the CQB discussion, right? And that's one part of things, right? You know, obviously talked with guys online like Blake Flannery, who's another OTG cadre member. I've never taken a class from Blake, looking to in the very, you know, close future, hopefully, but never taken a class from him. Guys like JT that you've heard on the podcast multiple times, guys like Brandon Ninebanger. You guys might've seen him in some of the Triarch videos and stuff back in the day, former Ranger. I've talked to a lot of people about this and tried to pick up pieces and understand in general more so I can help people understand as well. And I think that information, which I've been able to pull together, paired with my teaching background, are where I'm able to help people. It's something where I know a lot of people in this space will sit there and go, you don't need to learn CQB, you're LARPing. Okay, well, you're doing the same thing out in the woods with your team as you're, you know, working on small unit tactics. It's all LARPing. That's what training literally fucking is. Not to get too far from the point. But so I had people reach out, and as soon as I tell people, no, I'm not taking money for this, oh, it's cool, man. Yeah, keep up the good work. You know, you're spreading the good word. Good for you. I actually also had, and this isn't anything special, so I don't feel bad sharing it, the Michigan Tactical Officers Association Instagram page reach out to me and ask, hey, we see that you post this content and are there doing this stuff a lot. What's your background? Do you offer classes? Now, the shady part, not shady, that's the wrong word. I guess the crummy part of that is that after I told them, hey, I'm just a guy, I have a background in teaching outside of the tactical space. I've learned a lot of this stuff through my own interactions and my own course experiences. And I'm just here willing to share what I've learned with people that want to learn it. And then they left me on read. Completely, like, no response, no follow on, no, like, whatever. And these things are kind of normal for me now because it's the response I get is, oh, if you don't have an LE, MIL, or SWAT background, you shouldn't be showing people these things. And it's like, but then you say, well, I'm not taking any money for it. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. As if money would change anything. Because we've had people that show up to these practice sessions who work in law enforcement and have looked at this stuff and go, oh yeah, hey, cool, this is valuable. I'm going to apply this. And this isn't anything that I came up with. It's not like I sat down in my basement here on a whiteboard and concocted my own unique method of two-man CQB that's actually fundamentally flawed and outright dangerous, and then am, you know, promoting that to people and taking their money for it. I didn't. This is, and I tell everybody, this is what I learned in the Orion classes. This is the curriculum. It's based all on the curriculum which they've put together. And even Jared and Jason say, you guys don't believe me, you can go back, you can listen to those discussions, you can reach out to them. They don't claim the curriculum to be, you know, quote unquote, their material, because they've learned it from other people and they're constantly learning from other people to just make sure what they're teaching is the best that it can be because of the danger that's inherently tied into this. So I see myself doing this as a bit of an extension of that concept, but I do want to make it clear, just as they do, like, this isn't anything that I figured out. I don't own this, and it is somewhat limited. So if you're looking for a more specific application for this, if you do work at a federal level or at a local law enforcement level or even military, right, seek out other training. That's fine. This isn't supposed to be a structured training. It's just me showing guys how to do some stuff. And when you say that you're not taking money for it, it's okay. And no one has a problem with this stuff when you see videos of guys working together on the flat range. If you think about it, right, we go to the flat range with our friends. Hey, let's work on these drills. Hey, man, I'm having trouble transitioning effectively from my rifle to my handgun. It's really slow. I feel like I'm going as fast as I can, and it's still not meeting whatever arbitrary par time that I have in mind for myself. 1.5 seconds or 1 second or whatever, right? And your buddy can sit there on the range who maybe they've gone through a bunch of classes, maybe they haven't, maybe they're just faster than you, and they can objectively look at what you're doing, and they can, because they can watch you, you can't obviously watch yourself externally, they can say, oh, well, hey, man, you know, your motion is really, it's big, like you have a big exaggerated motion when you're swinging the rifle out. You know what I mean? They can help you figure that out. They're not, if they were to take money for it because you're, that's what they asked for and you did it, I don't think most people would bat an eye at that and have a problem with it. So it's interesting where we draw the lines on what is acceptable to quote unquote teach people. And then when we're just sharing, and it's like the line of delineation seems to be financial compensation. And I find that very interesting, because when we talk to people that have become subject experts in their particular area of passion, so it could be competitive shooting. So shooting at a performance level or a high level of performance, whatever, right? They've spent tens of thousands of dollars, no doubt, on ammunition. They have spent probably at least tens of thousands of dollars then on training classes, if the classroom way is the route that they went. Some people learn better in a structured environment. That's fine. You know, some people, like, look at everything that Lucas Botkin did, teaching himself on the range with minimal classroom interaction. Certainly put in tens of thousands of hours of his life and tens of thousands of rounds of ammunition, which equate to a ton of money. So there's money invested, which you can always make more money, yes, but then there's time invested. You can't get time back. So is it still unfair to look at somebody and say, you're not allowed to ask for compensation for that? And it's like, well, you know, I don't know that I necessarily completely, and I'm guilty of it too. Like, I don't know that I would necessarily agree with that, because if you spent $5,000 flying across the country to take, you know, 3 different classes and shoot all this ammo to learn from different people, why wouldn't you be able to potentially recoup some of that cost? You know, if you think about it that way, certainly if you know how to work on a car, right, and it's not your job, but your buddy comes over and he needs help doing his brakes, and you go, hey, man, you want to throw me like $100 for my time on this because I'm doing it for you? And no one goes, well, you're not a mechanic. You can't charge me money for this. So it's odd, and I get it, because it's not a fair, like, apples to apples comparison. When we're talking about one skill, I guess a brake job could also be life-threatening. I was going to say one's life-threatening and one's not. CQB is inherently dangerous, but driving around with faulty brakes can also be very dangerous. So I guess in that, maybe it's a good example. I don't know. In both scenarios, it's upon you as the individual, like, responsible to do your research and understand, hey, is this a competent individual that I'm learning from or allowing to work on my vehicle or whatever have you? Because you will ultimately be the one to suffer those consequences. And again, you know, I think is there another metric, a different line of delineation aside from solely the financial compensation piece of this? Because like I said, in my own interactions, as soon as I tell people, you know, I wasn't taking any money for that, Oh, it's okay. All is forgive. Well, not in like every circle. I'm sure there's still plenty of purists out there that are telling people you can't, you know, as a civilian, you can't quote unquote teach CQB because you've never been operational. And I get that. That is a huge component to the conversation. It is, because it changes a lot of things when you have somebody shooting back at you. There's environmental considerations. There's contextual learning that takes place when you're out there doing the thing for real, not just pretending, when you're doing it for real, and you're serving warrants, when you're clearing houses overseas, whatever, that can't be, you can't get that secondhand, you know, and I would never try to be dismissive of that consideration. So I hope that's very clear when I'm saying that. But what I am saying is that when we look at teaching fundamental skills, just like when I was teaching musicians, I was never, you know, I was never a world champion at what I did. I never did drum corps in the summer. I never meddled in the competition that I was in because, you know, I wasn't at that skill level. I wasn't able to do those things. So that's fine. Maybe I can't take somebody to that ultimate level. However, I certainly know the fundamentals. As a percussionist, as a drummer, right, as a performer, I've been able to take several students who didn't hardly know how to hold drumsticks to being, you know, quite competent and capable musicians, marching musicians at that, because then there's a physical movement component to that where it's, choreographed and everything. And I see this to be somewhat a very similar discussion. And those of you guys that have, again, you've listened to the discussions I've had with the guys from Orion Training Group, you've watched their YouTube content and things like that, or hopefully you've been through one of their classes, not so shameless plug, go check out their website, you guys. You can love or hate Jared online. You can love or hate what they're doing. If you want to learn CQB, these guys break it down and put it in a way that is built on fundamental principles that are non-negotiable. And it's not because it's just their way. It's literally the way to do CQB. Everybody that you will ever talk to that's worth anything will agree that speed, surprise, violence of action are your fundamentals of CQB. What you do with them after that, that's where things vary, but it's literally the three agreed pillars of close quarters combat, right? Or close quarters battle or structure clearance work, right? So when you are teaching fundamentals and you're teaching people these skills and how to execute them on a fundamental level, that to me is different than when you're putting them through, you know, like a situation and a simulated situation. Maybe it's like a hostage rescue format and stuff, which certainly there are companies out there that do that. And the good ones, the ones who do it really well, I think they restrict that stuff to LE and military, which on one hand I get, on the other hand, it's like, eh, but you also can't learn that kind of thing in a single weekend. So I do understand that too, because, if you can't teach something completely, you shouldn't have it as a, you know, advertised course. Like, oh, you'll be a hostage rescue expert after our 4-day class. And it's like, no, dude, your brain's gonna be so fucking overloaded. And I can say that because I've been there. You're not gonna be able to. You'll have to take that as a separate course. And yeah, unless you do that as your job, you're probably not gonna get enough training time in to where you're really gonna get the full value. You're not gonna realize the full value from that kind of learning. Now, that said, learning the fundamentals is the base point and the foundation for every skill we talk about. So there are shooters out there that still, hey, every year or every couple years, I'll go back and take a fundamentals course from somebody I respect as a good instructor, because our fundamental, or maybe you should if you don't, because fundamentals are where we sometimes have our biggest problems. We don't realize that if you have a flaw in your presentation or your stance or whatever, that creates, it trickles down, right? It ripples out for, you know, whatever way you want to explain this, right? And it can create much larger issues. And you have this huge issue. Oh, well, that's because of this issue, which is caused by this issue, which is caused by this little problem that you have. And then fixing that little problem is the first step in remedying all of those other problems. So having strong fundamentals and a good command of the principles behind any skill set is good. You know, so when we're having the conversation between this, again, I think that if, as long as I present it as, hey, I'm just sharing what I learned, most people are fine. You know, now, again, I'll say it again, there are always going to be those people, and there's plenty of them, they'll sit there and say that it's unrealistic for you to ever consider anything other than one man structure clearance. And it's like, okay, so I shouldn't learn how to move and communicate as a team. And instead, I should put myself through the gauntlet of mental processing that is solo room clearance, because the masses somehow deem it to be so. And by masses, I usually mean like guys that were in the military that never got to do CQB, cops that like to think that they're doing CQB when they're not really doing that. They're I don't want to say just patrol officers, but they're patrol officers that don't move past that point. Not to, again, take anything away from their service, but like you need to also be very honest when you have an evaluation and an assessment of this. And, you know, it's very frustrating for me to not be able to understand this, because the more I dig into it, it kind of just becomes this odd societal construct that we've placed on ourselves, because people who know how to do these things don't want to lose that thing that makes them special. I mean, when you really distill it down to its core principle, and I could be off the mark here. If you guys believe that, please tell me, like, hey, I mean, you could probably be polite about it, because some of you guys are quite fucking rude in the comment sections, but hey, no, there's just like, but if you can articulate it, instead of just saying civilians shouldn't learn this or civilians shouldn't teach it, I think you should be able to articulate past that to the why. And I think that's where people lose it. And I think when you can't articulate that, it's indicative of a larger problem in your argument, that is, which is that you don't fully understand your point, which means that you're forming your point not based off logic and facts, but you're building it off of emotion and feeling. And I'm not trying to invalidate your feelings, Kings. I am just telling you that your argument may not be as strong and as infallible as you wish it to be if you can't do that. And that's, Jared makes a joke all the time. He goes, you guys think you're here to learn CQB. I'm just here to teach you how to argue better on the internet. And it makes me laugh, because this is one of the things, like CQB as a topic, but in general, civilians as sources of information, civilians as subject matter experts, right, is something that has been hotly contested and hot and highly debated for the last several decades in this space, specifically the last decade, as we've seen things like YouTube really blow up and become the forefront of information access, because everybody can do it. Now, yes, some people are just going to be flat wrong. I think that you have to be a little bit more measured than, oh, my favorite YouTube channel told me that you don't need this and that you never need to learn how to do CQB, or you never need to learn how to move and communicate as a small unit through austere environments, because that's just unrealistic. And to be fair, both of those things are completely false. I think if you want to be a capable and prepared individual, you should know how to do those things in a pair, in a group of 4, 5, 10. And that's why training groups are so goddamn important. And I've gone through classes now with multiple times now with the same guys, and you learn how each other move. You learn how they think. You can, like, not, I don't want to say you can predict them, but you know they're going to be where they need to be, and you are able to move very effectively as a team built around and based around that. There's a lot of value in it, but I feel like I'm getting a little bit further away from the point. Now, the problem comes in, like I said, if I were to start taking money for this, because I feel like we then start looking at this from, if you look at it from a data and analytics standpoint, we can do some benchmarking and say, well, you know, on average, this is what companies charge, or you can even just compare one-to-one with, you know, other, I guess, instructors, right? So, hey, I know, again, the Two Vets Development guys, if you're here in Michigan, they're doing a class on July 12th, a fundamentals, CQB fundamentals class, and they charge $175 for that fundamental introduction class. And I think it's like 5 hours, something like that, 5-6 hours, something like that, right? So shout out to Drew and Kyle. If you guys are in the area and you're looking to get your feet wet, you missed the Orion class, here you go. Here's an opportunity for you. So the benchmarking with that could be like, oh, well, they charge $175. So Austin, why are you charging $200? And they go, well, there's a couple of reasons behind it. There could be, right? Hey, maybe I'm using a different facility that costs more. Maybe I put the value of my time somewhat higher than theirs. Or maybe my class is designed with less people in mind, right? So they wanted to have 8 people. I only wanted to have 6 people. So that, therefore, the cost per individual has to be higher to meet the requirements. So there's other like considerations in there, but we don't evaluate that from a data and analytics standpoint. We just see, hey, you're as a civilian charging more than these guys who have a background, and therefore you're doing the wrong thing without fully understanding what you're looking at. We just, you know, knee-jerk reaction. And to be clear, I'm not Because some of you guys, I feel like your brains will like wander, and then you'll hear me say, "I'm charging $200." This is a fictitious instance. I am making this purely an example. The Two Vets Development Group class, that is real though. If you guys want to go sign up for it, try to support the local Michigan homies. I do not charge money for classes, just to be very clear once again, so nobody can take this out of context and say that I do. I don't even run classes, to be honest with you guys. Like, the training sessions on Thursdays, like, it's become more of a hangout thing. And then, yes, if the Two Vets guys are there, they have their input and their way of doing things. I've learned a different way. We collab on it. Hey, we talk about it, show people some stuff. Everybody learns. Everybody has a good time. I think it's a really, really good thing for the community, and a way to bring people together for networking. I connected with Ariel from Sturker Defense through this. We started working together on stuff, which is awesome. Obviously, that's where I met Kyle and Drew at Two Vets, was through there. Just all kinds of good stuff going on. And it's because of the, you know, quote unquote, teaching that I do on these Thursday night sessions. And if we take the compensation piece out of it, here's what I'll say is unique to me, is that we have people out there in all skill sets who have been removed from, I don't want it to sound disrespectful, they're not removed from relevancy, but we all know there are companies out there that have guys who were in law enforcement for about a cup of coffee, and then they get out, and it's been 10 or 15 years since they got out, and they are now using that bit of their background to run a training company. And they haven't updated their curriculum. They haven't changed what they're doing. They haven't bothered to develop themselves as a communicator. In fact, they still yell at students. They still like lose their shit when guys do certain things and everything. It's a bad experience. And for some reason, they're still given a bit more grace in the scope of this discussion than folks who otherwise are invested in, hey, maybe I didn't work in law enforcement. And by the way, I'm not teaching, you know, a course that's on arrest procedures and things like that. I think cover contact in a CQB context is something that you should know how to do. And it's not unique to fucking law enforcement. If you're clearing your own house because you saw somebody broke in and your kids are in there and you go through and you find this guy, I think you should know how to hold a gun on him while your buddy that may be with you handcuffs him, or understand how to do it on your own or whatever have you, right? Since most of us are married, that's two people, and two people to take a room, clear structure, whatever. So here's the thing, is that those guys, because they have that law enforcement background, without the investment in becoming a better teacher with more relevant curriculum, are still given more grace than people who don't. And we like to draw these vague connections and assumptions that just because you never, how can I put this? Just because you never did the thing, that you can't also help people learn how to do those things. Because learning is learning and teaching is teaching. And yes, context is helpful. The other thing I'll throw out there, and again, this is just like, I'm not even trying to make an argument necessarily one way or the other. I'm just saying for your consideration, as somebody who I hope is trying to objectively look at this discussion and make up your own mind, is a lot of the things that were done in the global war on terror are not things that we as civilians can do. You know, if I see my front doors open and I know I left my wife home alone, ran to the store, came back 25 minutes later, doors open and my dogs aren't barking like they always are, something's wrong. I go in and I'm clearing the structure. I cannot, just without, you know, any kind of discernible processing, just pop whoever I see in my house. I can't. They have to, I mean, there's probably some legalities behind that. But in military context, I've had several people tell me, You see them, they're a threat, therefore you shoot them, full stop. And some people say, well, no, in the military we did a little bit different, we had this, we have this. I'm telling you, I've had military people put me in those contexts and say, yeah, I would just pop that guy in the head, right or wrong, it's happened. But again, because they, you know, they have military service and or military service paired with law enforcement experience, and even some shitty cases, oh, you're totally justified, without really getting into it. Like, my wife could be in the basement talking with the neighbor and the dogs aren't barking because they didn't hear me come home, and they're down there freaking out over somebody new being in the house. But I come downstairs and see somebody that's not my wife and shoot them. Now I'm completely fucked as a civilian because I made the wrong decision. So for me, I don't want to say it takes anything away from that military knowledge, experience, the tactics, the understanding. I think the more information you have at your more access you have to that information, whether it's law enforcement or military, American or foreign, you know, I think that is just more data you can use to form a conclusion for yourself on how you want to do things. I have my own personal feelings on certain methods and stuff. Guys will, you know, jump all over comment sections. Oh, you can't. Oh, you know, the Project Gecko videos. I saw one last night and somebody commented, oh, you did the peak. The internet operators are going to come out and chastise you. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's not something that I personally agree with. So I did this crazy thing. You guys aren't going to believe it. I just kept scrolling. It is wild. I didn't stop. I didn't make an asinine comment. I was like, yeah, I wouldn't do that, and then leave. Now I do need to be better about that, because I feel like I'm losing traction on social media because I refuse to engage in the comment sections. And I think that's an opportunity for me to grow, but that's here nor there in this discussion. But what I'm saying again is that when we're talking about information sources and relevancy to what you're trying to learn and what you can be applicable with, because, and we can't say that this is a non-starter, because guys a lot of times say, when will you as a civilian need to employ these skills? And you can actually provide reasonable context for when you may need to do structure clearance work. Okay. Whether it's a singleton, as a duo, as a squad, right? Squad, I'm saying 3 to 5 guys, especially if you know, have a training group or a preparedness group or a mutual benefit group or whatever you guys call it, where you practice this stuff together. And then you have one of these, you know, hashtag no kings protests go on, shit's get weird. And you and your buddies all live in a very heavily populated area, and you have to consolidate and potentially move in these very suburban areas. It's a lot more like CQB than it is with small unit tactics, but it could be either. We can take it out of the CQB discussion. We should take it out of the CQB discussion. And know how to do this stuff, it invalidates that point that people make, saying like, when are you ever going to do it? Well, here at these, you know, and they go, oh, well, you know, whatever, people flip out and lose their goddamn minds. I digress. And you can't sit there and say you'll never use this as a reason not to learn it, and then also say when you do learn it, you can't teach it to somebody else. I think that if you do learn it and you know how to do it, why shouldn't you be able to share that information with someone else? You know what I mean? It's like saying, like, I heard a story from somebody at work about McDonald's, okay? And I promise this has a point. In the 80s or end of the 80s, early 90s, where they were having a huge expansion to their menu, and then they discovered that they were having a lot of errors and people not being able to work the cash register with the new items and things because they had a high illiteracy rate at McDonald's. Go figure. People that fucking work at McDonald's have a low literacy rate, and that's... you know, we're supposed to be paying them $17 and $20 an hour, but I digress there as well. So what did they do? Oh, they developed a cash register with pictures on it instead of, instead of words. And it's like, cool, we simplified the shit out of this. And, you know, okay, cool. Like, all right, we made a cash register with pictures on it. We simplified the shit out of this. And that's great. Now anybody can do it, and anybody can be effective in doing that job, right? and so what they did was they were able to take something like that and simplify it down to its dumbest form. And I feel like sometimes we look at like guerrilla combat that way, where like, oh, well, you don't actually need training. You don't need to be literate. You don't need this. You don't need it. You don't need it. We're like really obsessed with telling people in our community, you don't need this to validate our own goals and biases and things. And here, just do this instead. And here, we're just going to solve. We're going to distill it to its simplest form. And then we're just not capable at all. And I think that's the dangerous, slippery slope that we run into when we talk about who's allowed to teach. Even like the whole point of this conversation almost becomes redundant when you talk about like, well, you can do this, but you have to call it sharing instead of teaching, and you're never allowed to take money for it, because then it violates these rules that we have that were constructed for us by arbitrary individuals in our community that we don't know, we'll have never met, never talked to, never spoken to, but because they deem it so based off of, some Velcro patches that they wore for a couple years of their life. And we didn't, I'm associating myself with the civilian group because I am a civilian who never, you know, did things, that's the way it has to be. And it, like, think about it in the context of, you know, if we just said, oh, like the simpler we get, oh, you know how to pull a trigger. So now you're ready to go. No, nobody ever makes that fucking point, you know? And that's the thing. It's a training issue. And that's where to connect the dots, that's where the cash register came in. I was having a discussion around if training is necessary. Now it's a different conversation entirely. We addressed training rather than have a bunch more training. We addressed it with a simplified cash register. Well, we can't simplify the combatives that we're talking about here. So whether it's small unit movement and tactics, whether it's CQB, whether it's medical, there's only a certain degree to which you can distill that for simplicity before you start losing effectiveness. I'm pretty sure that there's a name for that phenomenon where the further you reduce it, you break a certain threshold where you start losing effectiveness. And I don't know the name for that. I do apologize, but I'm pretty sure I've heard that from somebody before. So kind of, let's bring this, full circle again, right? Like I was contacted by one training entity here in Michigan, which is, I mean, it's really cool. At some point or to some degree, that's a validation to me, I think, of what I'm doing. Not that what I'm doing is the right thing or a better thing than what like law enforcement in my state is doing, but just that I feel validated in saying that sharing this and trying to help people is the right thing because A, it's getting noticed. And B, it's getting noticed not only just by people in the community that want to learn, or people in the community that want to hate, because that door swings both ways. We all know that to be very, very true. But noticed by the Tactical Officers Association for my state. And I don't honestly know who runs that Instagram page, and I don't know a ton of the ins and outs behind that organization. But if they're noticing and they're reaching out, my assumption is they were going to ask me to do something until they found out that because I don't have whatever resume or background they want, that it's kind of invalidated, which sucks because I feel like I still have a lot to share, a lot of insight to share, and perhaps maybe come at it from a different perspective. Like I said, my background in teaching, I think, I look at the way a lot of people in this community run courses, the way they quote unquote teach and share what they've learned and everything. And I'll tell you, just because you're good at something, I've said this before on this podcast, it's been a lot of episodes since I got into teaching and music and stuff like that. But I'll tell you, a lot of people assume that because they were good at doing something themselves, they will be good as teachers. And that's just not fucking true. It is quite possibly one of the greatest myths of the world is that because you are good at something, you will therefore be good at teaching that something to somebody else. And teaching in and of itself is a skill set all its own, where you have to invest in yourself. You have to invest in your communication skills. You have to invest in yourself emotionally. I'll tell you, as a young instructor, and again, this is outside of the tactical space, but you see this. You still see this with people in the tactical realm, so it's still fucking relevant. Guys will explain things one way, maybe two ways, and if you still don't get it in class, you start getting yelled at. Okay, so that's never like the good, like, I don't know about you, I don't learn well and I'm getting screamed at. I don't. Now, you can still apply pressure to people to get them to push to perform better without screaming and treating them like shit. Somebody who's very, very good about this, this is my opinion, I've said this to him before on this podcast and in person, is Jason Ransom. So Ransom Tactical Solutions, one of the cadre at Orion. Jason, we make the joke in class, or Jared makes the joke too. Jared's like mom and Jason's like dad, where mom's like, oh, it's okay, do it again, try it again. And Jason's got like a little bit of the heavy hand. I find that I actually learn better from Jason because that's just how my learning works, and it sucks. I feel worse when I make mistakes, but I also find that I hold myself to a little bit of a higher level when I'm learning from him, and just that I walk away from both gentlemen with a ton of knowledge. I'm not saying one's better than the other, to be clear. They acknowledge this as well, so it's not anything new to anybody, or it shouldn't be. But you can't just sit there and fucking scream at people. You have to be invested as an educator and understand how to get the best out of people, when to use a heavy hand, when not identify that it's not a lack of effort or attention to what's going on. Some people just aren't understanding. They're not grasping it because you haven't yet spoken it to them, demonstrated it to them in a way which makes sense. The adult learning model is a great thing. And because of that, it allows a lot of people to succeed at a much faster rate. However, some people work better when you diagram shit. So some people need to go back when we, in class, right? And this is, I've been, every class we've done this, where people will go back and they'll bug the instructor during lunch. And that's a terrible way to word that. I apologize. And I think that good instructors love this when people will come and talk to them during the meal break and say, hey, while we're eating, can we diagram this? And the nice part about Battlefield CQB is in the break room area or the meeting room area, whatever you want to call it. One whole wall is wall-to-ceiling whiteboards. So you can sit there, and we used it to start the class, with curriculum and stuff. We don't really use it on our Thursday night sessions. We'll just act stuff out, out in context. but like we can diagram, we were able in class, people were able to diagram stuff. Jared worked with a couple different guys who work in law enforcement over the meal breaks on both days to like draw out these scenarios and talk about like floating threats and procedural things and really have like a nuanced discussion. And some people work better that way. They work better by seeing it in the 2D where you can go, okay, well, yeah, but what if you, you know, and you erase the guy that you just drew and you move him over here? What if he moved here and see what I'm, this is what I'm thinking. And people just process that shit differently. That is the part of this that makes you a good educator. And it's almost completely irrelevant to your actual experience and background in the field. Now, yes, that stuff helps because you can say, well, no, it doesn't work this way because, you know, I actually did this when I was in the field once and this is what happened. Here's the consequences of that. We got shot at. I almost got shot, blah, blah, blah. Things like that. Like I'm not, again, I want to be very clear that I'm not disregarding or devaluing anyone's experience, but it needs to be understood that I think that the teaching component, the educational aspect to this is very unique when you compare it to experience. They have a correlation, but they are not so directly related that having experience is enough to make you a good educator. That shit, I will say again and again and again, over and over until I pass out of oxygen deprivation, because it is a very important thing to understand, you guys. It really is. And it's why when people ask me about taking classes, I harp so heavily on it. I'm like, do your research on who the instructor is. Like, and it makes it, I get that. It makes it more difficult for smaller companies when everybody looks at it that way because it's harder to get more exposure. But at the same time, like if you are good at what you're doing and what you're teaching is genuinely like you're doing an awesome job and people walk away going, man, that was fucking fantastic. I would do that again in a heartbeat for double the money, you know? And good companies with good educators, the ones that are breaking into the scene, that are making those waves and turning those heads, whether the old heads like it or not, you know, the people who've been here, the established companies that have been around for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years plus, whether they like it or not, they're turning heads because they're providing a better experience to the consumer. And typically that means that people are learning, you know, I don't want to put it in like product terms or in put it in the scope of consumerism. But it's a very big deal and something to look at. And here's the thing is the more people that walk away having learned from the class does this awesome thing in our community where then they can take what they've learned at the class and come share it kind of like what I do, right, with the people around them. And then the community gets better. And as the community gets better, you can do things like have those instructors come back and teach advanced courses because now you're not just building up that lowest common denominator tier. Yeah, there's definitely still, I think, always going to be an appetite for those classes, but it's the same thing with your local gun ranges where you have a basic carbine or basic handgun or fundamental, you know, handgun, whatever. And then you have advanced handgun where you do things like, you know, two reload, two drills and shooting and moving and stuff. Because now you've developed enough of a following and enough of a training base where you can take those fundamental skills and build upon them and then have like a good reason to offer an advanced curriculum. Whereas, you know, you could just do the old fashioned way of, hey, we're offering an advanced course and you can come take it if you want to do advanced stuff. And instead you just trip on your ding ding through the entire class. You can't hit the fucking target. Your reloads will suck, but you know, at the beginning of class, they'll still suck at the end of class because you never learned anything in between there, to make that worthwhile. So yeah, I mean, guys, I find this to be an extremely interesting question. And if you have a different way of articulating or a different perspective or point of view around like how you personally look at that and say, this is how I see the difference, like, you know, and maybe you're one of those people, you just feel really, really strongly that civilians shouldn't be learning any of this stuff. Or, hey, if you take classes, cool. One thing I will never, I don't say never, I always recommend people to take classes, but one thing I won't ever advocate for people to do is just go take a class, go take a class, go take a class, go take a class, go take a class. And I sound like a broken record there, and that was very much by design. You can learn, like one of the things I did as I brought my brother out to the Orion Training Group Fundamentals class that we had, you know, last month. Hey man, make sure you come out with me to Battlefield a couple of times. Well, okay, yeah, I don't really know anything. Like, yeah, well, here's the thing. You're going to feel more comfortable personally having come out and spent a couple hours with me working through learning how to, like, pan, learning some nonverbal stuff, just basic stuff, which we went over in the class again anyways. And then you go into class and you feel a bit more comfortable because now it's not entirely new to you. It's just mostly new to you. Oh, hey, no, I know how to pan. Oh, hey, I know how to slide through and make, you know, entrance. I know how to scan my sector. I know how to brush. Okay, well, now we're going to learn all of that in different contexts, in different ways, different reasons, different layouts, and you're going to be able to build on that and be better for it. And that's all built off of me sharing what I learned in my class, and I could turn somebody else around and go, hey, I really think that you should take this class. I really think you're going to get a lot out of this class. I'm going to additionally share what I've learned with you, not as a replacement for you going to the class, but, you know, hey, if you really like this, and my brother did, he had a fantastic time in with what I showed him, and then also really loved the course too, and is now doing things like, hey, what else can we do? You know, wants to go on the trip out to the Human Trafficking Awareness Range Day in Pennsylvania in September, wants to come out and do more training on our Thursday night sessions and stuff, and it's helping him grow and develop and advance as an individual that wants to be better prepared. So I know I ask for this every episode, you guys. You know, make sure when you're done listening to this, you hit the like, you hit the subscribe, you hit the follow, check us out on Instagram and YouTube, but then drop some feedback on this. I'd really be interested if you guys are able to articulate how you see this discussion and how you personally view the question. Like, hey, this is where I draw that line of delineation. This is how I see it. Or this is maybe you can't do that because it's a hard one to answer. Like, I'm sitting here, I've pontificated for over an hour now, and I don't think we've come to a concrete answer because I don't know that there is a concrete answer. Maybe instead you're able to provide some like requirements you have in your own eyes of when you would listen to somebody who doesn't necessarily have the background professionally speaking, but is able to articulate on some of these skills to help people grow fundamentally. You know, I think it's very, very interesting. And I think as long as people present themselves for what they are, I don't have a tremendous problem with it as long as you have a way to validate that. You know, maybe it's, hey, found a video of this guy teaching, you send it to somebody who you trust because they have the professional experience doing those things. Hey, is what he's saying right? And, you know, oh, well, I do it a different way, but yes, this is right, or I would never do that. Because there's a lot of snake oil out there. I get it. There's a lot of people that look and sound like me in the civilian space saying, come take a class from me, learn from me, hashtag just as good. But again, that's where the responsibility of the consumer or the responsibility of the student comes into play. You need to know and understand what you're looking at, what you're getting into, what it is that you're trying to learn and why you're trying to learn it. You can't just put it all on the person that's trying to put out the information and the knowledge. I think that's at the same time we're having this conversation, I think that's an unfair standard to set, is that the responsibility is all on the person who's just trying to be helpful. Not to say that they don't have any responsibility in putting this information out, because in a lot of these instances, this is quite literally skills that are used in life and death scenarios, especially if you're working with guys who are or could be first responders, maybe at agencies and departments that don't have a huge budget. So they're looking for opportunities to interact, learn, and train with people. And they take, you know, maybe they trust you. Maybe you're a very trusting person or very convincing, you know, individual. You sell them on it, they go use it, and then they get shot, which is always a possibility, or they die. And it comes out that, oh, well, this tactic is what led to that. I mean, I would think you would feel kind of shitty for that, or I'd hope you would feel shitty because you're kind of a charlatan at that point. But again, thank you guys so much for listening. Like I said, a very interesting question, very interesting discussion. You know, I thought about doing this with a guest, and maybe I will. Maybe I'll get like JT on here. We'll do a follow-on discussion to this and figure out like where the discussion lies, and maybe like a part one, part two deal, where we can take all my thoughts here and then kind of filter it through somebody who has experience at the military level, at the SWAT level, and then he'd be a great one for it because he also does it as like undercover rescue, which is like a step removed from SWAT and a little bit different and unique, where I think sometimes he's looked at as a subject expert in that realm than all time. And sometimes also maybe questioned sometimes in that, just because people don't know what they don't know. It's a very intricate discussion point when you really, really dig into it. So let me know what you guys think. Thank you so much, as always, for checking out and listening to us as we roll into 2025. We're like halfway through June at the time that this is dropping anyways, which is crazy to think about. I think it's so, so awesome. We've got lots of good guests lined up, you guys, lots of things planned as we get into the end of June and push through July. As always, you guys have guests you would like us to bring on, shoot me a message. Let me know. I can't guarantee anything because people are busy. Some people don't check their messages very often, and some people just don't do podcasts and things like that. But if there's genuinely either a very specific individual you want us to bring on, or even just a topic that you want to hear more about, like last week's discussion with Rob from Constellation, like we didn't really get into drones very heavily. I'm actually pretty interested in it. Might explore that further to, grow that as something that we cover here on the podcast. So let us know, you guys. Reach out, send us a message. Again, the likes and follows are huge. We appreciate every single one of you guys so, so, so much. But that's all I have for you guys for this week's discussion. Stay safe out there. Enjoy the summer weather. Go touch grass. Hug your mom. Tell her you love her. Kiss your wife. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.